Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It was the shot heard round the world at Lexington and Concord that signified the beginning of the U.S. War of Independence from the British Crown. It would not be the last shot, and long after the Revolutionary War, more gunshots told the story of a new nation. And these shots were not heard round the world.
July 25th, 1844. The Baltimore Sun, shot by accident. A young man named Silas B. Howe accidentally shot himself on board the North America, near Rochester, on Friday last, with a rifle he had loaded to kill squirrels. He was from Detroit, and in his pocket was a letter from his mother, with this caution: Silas, be very careful of your gun.
June 22nd, 1874. The Rutland Daily Globe. A Kansas boy earned a nice Bible by committing 300 verses to memory, and then traded his Bible for a shotgun and accidentally shot his aunt in the leg. A fearful warning to aunts.
Are these strange, polite messages, non-criminal stories, a carefully researched art project, a history of this nation's relationship to guns, or do they represent something even deeper?
February 24th, 1916. The Red Cloud Chief. Headline: Kept on Ironing. Accidentally shot in the knee by her 11-year-old nephew, who was playing with a revolver, Mrs. Lillian M. Thomas continued to iron handkerchiefs. Her task finished, she notified a physician.
It was while conducting research for another book about religions that author Peter Manceau found these curious stories and embarked upon a unique study of the role of firearms in American society, as well as depicting a new nation growing up with a peculiar sense of fatalism. His new book is called Melancholy Accidents: Three Centuries of Stray Bullets and Bad Luck.
Told with this feeling of there's nothing we can do about this. Certainly they're told at a time when guns were much more, had much more utility in American life than perhaps they do now. And so the sense that guns would be in your home, hung above your fireplace, was natural. And the idea that having them there is also bringing the possibility of death at any moment into your home was natural as well.
It also says something. I mean, these are little pixels. It says something about the broader picture of America as a violent place, America as a place that is anticipating gunfire, you know, use of guns for other reasons, and these are just tiny little consequences of that larger violent society. What did you see? Because it yearns for a bigger picture, it seems.
The bigger picture I found in these stories has to do with the way we think about the role of guns in making the nation. The mythology of guns in American history is that we owe guns for our independence. Guns opened the frontier. Guns defended the homestead. They provided sustenance when you needed to hunt to feed your family. And all of those things are true to an extent, but this great untold story of guns in American history is the way in which they brought an unending hapless tragedy to those who kept them in their homes and in their families. And I think our current gun problem has to do with the stories we tell about guns, with this idea that is so common that we are all starring in our own action movie, and if we are the good guy with the gun, we'll be able to prevent bad things from happening, which ignores the volatility of these objects, the danger, and that's a great untold part of American history. I believe these melancholy accidents reveal.
But were Americans fantasizing about guns in the way we think about it today, or was it more, there was the gun, there's the hammer, there's the rake?
That's exactly right. There was a far greater sense of utility with guns. A family needed a gun in most cases, in a way that very few people need a gun now. They've become far more of a hobby object than they ever were before. And so you have a lot more today occurrences of people cleaning them in their living room while they're watching television, for example. They've gone from being a tool to being a way of defining one's masculinity, often one's Americanness, one's sense of freedom.
When you read this book, you really get a sense that the Second Amendment folks are right. I mean, this is America. there's nothing that's aberrant about guns if you can draw this line straight back to the American Revolution. Is what's going on today fundamentally different from what was going on in these stories?
Well, one way of thinking about it is thinking about this idea of gun control, what this phrase means. To many people, gun control refers to the control of guns by the state. But those who want to own and use guns want to own and use them to exert some sense of control over their lives. And I believe that's the real difference, that it has become now this totem of self-reliance in a way that it was not early in American history, specifically because it no longer has the same type of utility. It mainly has an imagined utility, imagining yourself walking through the supermarket and needing to be the good guy with the gun. That's a very different way of thinking about and using guns than going to hunt a duck to feed your family.
When did you first come upon the Coeur d'Alene story, the contemporary story of the little kid who pulls the gun out of the purse and blows his mother away?
Just as it happened.
In the news, right?
In the news, yeah. Yes. And seeing this story light up Twitter and spread so quickly, while I was deep in the work of collecting these gun accident reports from centuries before and feeling there was this immediate resonance, the way in which the story was told, with every detail making it feel like some kind of tightly crafted short story. The mother walks into the Walmart with her child and her gun in a newly acquired gun purse. Chekhov says if there's a gun on the stage in the first act, it's bound to go off in the third. That's how that story felt. And that's how the telling of so many gun accident stories feels. You watch it and waiting for the gun to go off. And it had direct resonance to all of these gun accident stories from the past. You learn enough details about the people involved to feel the poignancy of the loss, but often not any more than that. And so to learn more about the people involved, I had to do some further reporting to paint a fuller picture, as I do in the introduction of the book.
Did doing this research change you at all?
I did not grow up around guns. I do not own guns now. But doing this research made me aware of the ways in which gun stories were very important to me growing up. The mythology of guns, watching the A-Team and war movies when things are solved with guns all the time. I started to realize that I, too, though I've collected these reports that some would say make a political case against guns, though that was not my intent, I, too, have been brought up and raised with this mythology of the good guy with the gun, and guns can solve problems. And collecting these reports, reading American history through them, reminded me that we are not talking about heroic self-reliance most often when we are telling stories about guns. Really, what's hidden beneath all of that is this hapless tragedy that happens again and again and again, but doesn't contribute to our sense of ourselves as freedom-loving, freedom-fighting Americans, and so often goes untold.
Peter Manceau is a guest curator at the Smithsonian Institution and author of Melancholy Accidents, Three Centuries of Stray Bullets and Bad Luck.